Well, Wisconsin is known as the Badger State, but you probably haven't seen a badger in the wild because they're most active at night. I've been lucky enough to see one in the wild once when I was out pheasant hunting with some friends, and it was a magical experience to see. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Emily Latch is our guest today. She's a professor at UW-Milwaukee with a focus on biodiversity genomics and led the Wisconsin Badger Genetics Project. And it's great to have her with us today. We'll hear more about the project and take your questions about badgers. Were you lucky enough, like me, to see a badger here in the state, or maybe it was in a zoo? I know they're in most of the zoos here in our state have a badger anyway. But talk about why maybe you love our state animal. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Professor Emily Latch, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Oh, well, it's great to have you with us. Well, as I said, I doubt that many people have seen a badger in the wild, or not as many as probably would like to have. How many badgers do we have in the state? Do we have any idea?
Isn't that a great question? Yeah, I agree that most people would love to see a badger in the wild, and they are really difficult to spot. As you said, they're nocturnal and they live underground most of the time, so they're pretty difficult to spot. Also, they like prairies, right? So when the grasses grow up above the height of a badger, you aren't going to see them even if they are running around. I don't know how many there are in the state. I wish we knew. Right. So when we first started this project, badgers were listed as a species with information needs by Wisconsin. So we just didn't know enough about them to say really much of anything. So after our study, we discovered that they are throughout the state. So even though you may not have seen them, they're out there. So they've been reported in every county in Wisconsin, and they seem to be doing really pretty well.
So tell us a little about your background. What led you maybe to teaching at UW-Madison, or Milwaukee, excuse me, and your interest in badgers?
Yeah, so I started off with an interest in genetics, and I got a bachelor's degree in Pennsylvania in genetic engineering. And that was amazing, right? It was an amazing experience. But when I realized that I could apply all those cool tools and ideas that I was learning to wild animals, I was hooked, right? So I went to do a PhD at Purdue University, where I was working in a wildlife management department. And I looked at, used genetic tools to look at reintroductions of wild turkeys. I also worked on mule deer and river otters and sturgeon and all the wildlife that makes, you know, the United States as great as it is. But they all had a focus on using genetic tools. And then I worked at the Smithsonian's National Zoological Park in Washington, D.C., where I did some conservation genetic research on endangered Amazonian birds and some threatened desert tortoises, with an incredible group of scientists. And then I came to UW-Milwaukee in 2008. And one of the projects that we started up almost immediately with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources was to study badgers in Wisconsin. So what a wonderful introduction to the state.
Oh, yeah, that's a great story. I love it. Willem and Colfax just has a comment for us, I think. Let's go there. Hi, Willem.
Hi. Early in the spring, I saw three little badger cubs sunning themselves at the end of their hole or whatever, their burrow, mm-hmm. and they were adorable. And then last fall, I saw some legs between our car and our truck where we park, and I thought it was a woodchuck, which I had seen, and I was worried about one of our kitties being out there, and I went around, and I came around the side of the truck, and it was a badger with its cub, a young badger. And it, I was maybe, you know, like 4 feet away, and it lunged at me, you know, with its claws and its teeth, and it hissed. I backed up, and it ran away. So then I found it had been burrowing behind a shed on our property, which I didn't really want because, you know, I didn't. So I put kitty litter down there, and I plugged it up with some heavy slabs that I had, and I tried to discourage it. And then I found the other outlet in our garden, and I anyway, I got them to move out of our yard anyway. But I do see them from time to time, and they're beautiful.
That's a great story. You're one of the lucky ones, Willem, that's for sure. And I think Emily would agree with me on that.
Yeah, for sure. It's really great that you've been able to see them. I agree that the badger kits are about as cute as they could possibly be. And to see them is really incredible. And so it must have been a nice surprise in terms of trying to discourage them. There are a lot of different strategies, each one more creative than the last, for trying to discourage badgers. But once you have a spot that is pretty good for digging and a healthy rodent population for, you know, some snacks for them, they like to stick around.
Yeah, and they can dig.
They are very efficient diggers. They're very well adapted to do it.
Those long claws can really get going for sure. Well, and Willem also mentioned the burrows. Talk about the burrows. What are they like?
Yeah, so they can be a lot of different things, right? So badgers go into torpor during the winter, so they are not very active right now. So they dig a burrow, a pretty extensive one, and then they will usually kind of hunker down. They'll awaken to eat and go to the bathroom and then kind of slow down again. But they use their burrows throughout the year. During the summer and fall months, they tend to move burrows around a lot more often. And so maybe every couple of days, they might move to a new location and sometimes miles away and dig a new burrow. So during this summer and fall, it can be a little easier to discourage badgers from being in your, you know, near your shed. During the winter, they might be stay put for a little while, but they're also not very active, so you might not even encounter them.
Now, Willem thought there, and maybe he's right, maybe he's not, but he said he had the hole behind the shed, but then he found he called it the exit hole by in his garden. Is that the case where they're, you know, it's just, there's just not one way to get out, or?
Sometimes, yeah. I think they're pretty clever, and so they will dig burrows so that they have multiple exits. That seems to be a pretty good strategy. So, yeah, they would do that.
So, and they're nocturnal. They don't like other creatures. So it's got to be tough to study them.
Yeah, they are nocturnal. They live underground for the most part, and they do have a bit of a reputation for being ill-tempered. They also can't be tracked using radio collars, so collars that send out a radio signal that you could use to track animals, because their heads are shaped like spades, right? They're shaped like triangles, and so the radio collars just slip right off their heads, and so it can be really difficult to track them. Another way that we might traditionally track animals is to put a pit tag, which is an injectable, like a microchip tracker that you might have on your pet. They can be challenging also because badgers live underground and can move really long distances. So we use genetics to track animals and to study them. And so DNA is a really good marker because it's found in all living things. It doesn't change throughout an individual's lifetime, and each individual's DNA is unique, like a fingerprint, right? So like an ear tag or any other tag that you might put on an animal, if you sample the DNA, if you sample the same DNA at two different points in time or in two different locations, you know that it came from the same individual animal. And so as that individual leaves offspring, it leaves that genetic legacy. those shared portions of DNA, right? And so since we know that DNA is inherited in this predictable manner, we can use it to track populations over time.
Penny in Altera, Minnesota, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I've been dying to see a badger, at least somewhat up close. I'm not sure if there are badgers near my home because I live at the end of a dead end where the gravel road is between farm fields. And this fall, I just saw these burrows with huge piles of dirt, good-sized holes, alongside, and I never saw any clear tracks because the dirt was so loose, they kind of filled in. So I did see a few spots where it looked like an animal was laying and making an indentation, but I also want to know if it was badgers, what would be my best way to get to see them, like sit in the evening and watch, or just wondering how I might get a chance, and if it does sound like a badger burrow.
Yeah, so badger burrows can be really similar to groundhog burrows. And so you very often see these big mounds of dirt and this burrow entrance, and you're not sure if it's a groundhog or a badger. When you mentioned the belly scrape, that does sound an awful lot like a badger. You might see with those really strong foreclaws, you might see scrape marks along the sides of the burrows. So that's another thing to look out for. It does sound like it might very well be a badger burrow, which is really exciting. To see them, like I said, at this time of year, they're pretty inactive. So you probably won't catch them very often outside of the burrow. But as spring comes along, depending on if it's a male or a female in there, you might have some kits to see, like we've heard about before, which are adorable. But they will certainly come out of their burrow more often. It'll be at nighttime, so that, I would recommend, dusk or night or just before dawn kind of stuff. Also, a lot of people have trail cameras, and if you can't see them in person, which would be the best thing, maybe the next best thing might be to try to catch it on camera. One of the things throughout our Badger Genetics Project was people sent us a lot of trail cam photos, and each one was better than the last. It was just so great to see everybody's pictures of badgers. They were just in so many different habitats doing so many different things, and it was just amazing to see them all. So we appreciate everybody sending us the pictures, both for research, but also just to look at them.
And Penny, you might set up a trail cam just to make sure that what's there is actually a badger. That wouldn't be a bad idea at all. And frankly, trail cams are a whole lot of fun. They're a whole lot of fun. Thank you, Penny, for calling. Emily Latch, our guest today. Professor Latch is a professor at UW-Milwaukee. She focuses on biodiversity genomics, and she's doing some really cool, has done some really cool research on badgers, and we're going to learn more about that after we take a quick look at the news. We'll be back with our guest, Professor Emily Latch, at about 6 minutes after 12. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about badgers on the show today, our state animal, with our guest, Professor Emily Latch, a professor at UW-Milwaukee with a focus on biodiversity genomics. Emily led the Wisconsin Badger Genetics Project. So as we talk with Emily, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've got an experience to share about a badger or a badger burrow, or maybe you can talk about why conservation is important to you when it comes to badgers. Maybe you contributed to the Badger Genetics Project. We had lots of people do that. And what was that experience like? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Org, and we have Christina from Glenwood, so let's just go there and see what's on Christina's mind. Hi there, Christina.
Hi there, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. I've seen lots of badgers in the summer, so I didn't realize that it was unusual. I was at a friend's place. We were walking in the woods, and we saw a family of five with three kids. They were so adorable. And then on my farm, one day I was pulling into my driveway, and I saw what I thought was a groundhog carrying a baby. It dropped it, so I got out of the vehicle, walked over there, and saw that it was actually a dead woodchuck. It looked so little in this big badger's mouth. And so I scooped it up in a plastic bag, and the badger ran into the grass, and then he'd come out, and he was kind of snarling, and I'd clap my hands, and he'd back up, and then he'd come out, and then he'd back up every time I clapped my hands. So it was a really fun experience, and one thing I love about being out in the country.
Christina, thanks for calling. A nice experience, but you were stealing that badger's food, probably. What do you think, Emily?
Yeah, I think it's no surprise that he must have been hungry that day and was looking to retrieve his lost prize. So, yeah, it was really amazing that you get to see them. I agree that it's really cool that they are around and that you get to spot them, and that being out in the country is a perfect spot to do it. You mentioned that they were in the woods. That's a really awesome point, and part of what we discovered when we started asking people to report badger sightings was they are everywhere. Badgers are normally considered to be a prairie associated species, so grasslands and dry prairies. And so we weren't sure where we would find them within Wisconsin, maybe just in the southwestern portion of the state. We weren't sure. And when reports started coming in and we started getting trail cameras and we started looking at habitats, they were everywhere. They were in forests. They were in agricultural fields. We found them in pretty much every habitat we could have imagined. So that was a really exciting part to what we were finding. And it sounds like it's something that you've known all along.
Yeah. The one that I saw was in a marsh. We were in a marsh pheasant hunting, and that's where we saw the badger. Vicki in Millador emailed us. This is kind of a fun story. She's seen badgers a few times in her woods over the years, but she had two incidents in daylight really surprised her. She spotted one about 20 feet away as she was walking into the woods. It stood up and arched its back like cats do. She kept walking as if she didn't see it, and it dropped down behind a log and disappeared as if it were a balloon deflating. And she was in a tree stand when one came down the edge of a flooding creek. She wondered if it was stuck on her side of the creek, but it jumped right in and looked like a furry cushion zipping across as if it did not even sink in the water.
Yeah, they're fast.
And they can swim.
Yeah.
Someone else wondered, how long do badgers live?
It's unclear how long they live in the wild, right? We don't know if we're seeing the same one or a different one from year to year, but in captivity they live about 12 to 15 years.
Yeah, that's probably on the long side, because in captivity they're fed and they're
well taken care of, for
yeah,
sure. Yeah,
if they get sick they get treated, and so that's probably the long
it probably is.
Jim from Lafarge called, couldn't stay with us. There are many badgers around his house, and now there aren't many squirrels. Badgers would take a squirrel, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. Badgers will take they're opportunistic carnivores. So they will take anything that they can get their little claws around that's probably smaller than a groundhog. So pretty much anything.
Well, let's talk more about your research. First, the overall goals of the research. Give us those.
Yeah. So the overall goal of the research started out with just trying to understand a little bit more about where badgers are and how well they were doing in the state. Like I said, they were a species with information needs, which is a really dissatisfying category to be in, right? Being the state animal. So we just set out to see where they were and how well they were doing. And again, we use genetics to be able to do that. So traditionally, you would capture animals and take a blood sample or a tissue sample and extract DNA from it that way. As we've talked about today, the badger is pretty elusive. It's difficult to find. Trapping is pretty inefficient. But if DNA can be found in nearly all of your cells, then we can extract it from samples of feathers or hair or scat that can be collected without even handling the animal at all. So for badgers, we used hair snares. And so what we did was relied on all you wonderful people in Wisconsin to report badger burrow sightings to us. And then we would go out to those burrows, set up a hair snare in the burrow. So like a comb for to gently comb the badger hair and get a few hair samples. At the tip of a hair sample is the follicle where it attaches to this, to the animal. And that in there, in that follicle is DNA. And so we had a website, a phone hotline. We recorded all activity that people reported to us. And then we collected hair snares from badgers as they entered and left their burrows and then used those hair samples to extract DNA.
That is really cool. And so you had to rely on help here in the form of average citizens then.
Not average citizens, superhero citizens. Enthusiastic badger supporters. So yeah, I mean, everybody was amazing. And, you know, I had only been at UW-Milwaukee for about a year when I started this project, and the outpouring of support and enthusiasm and interest and interaction was just incredible. And so what a awesome introduction to the state. And we ended up with over 500 verified reports of badger activity. And I mean, verified like trail cam photos and you know, yeah, people collecting cell phone videos of badgers running around. And so during about the 4 years or so that we did collect reports. And so we heard about badgers from all over the state, which was fantastic news. And then, you know, we used some genetic data to, we sampled about, I think it was about 250 badgers across the state, collected genetic data from those. And it revealed that, you know, badgers are pretty healthy in Wisconsin. They have robust levels of genetic diversity. Populations are well connected throughout the state. There aren't very much, there aren't very many barriers to badgers moving throughout the state. They were doing pretty well, which was fantastic news.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris in De Pere has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thank you. So I've had two close encounters with badgers. One was just a preteen little boy playing in the woods, laying down behind a berm or whatever, and a badger actually came out and brushed up against me and walked away like I was nobody's business, didn't care at all. And then a decade or two later, I was in the military in Idaho and going across the field on maneuvers, jumped behind a berm, and two or three came out, and they were pretty snarly and wild. I actually got up and ran away. I didn't care about the war games at that point anymore. Is it common for them to work in teams like that?
No. Yeah, not really. So they're mostly solitary. It kind of depends what time of year. So again, if they're, you know, so the baby badgers, the kits, will stay with mom for, you know, pretty much till the end of summer. So they are born in the spring and they stay with mom till about the end of summer. So if you saw a group of them together and they were all pretty good size, I would guess it was probably the end of summer or early fall before those kits then disperse and find their own territories. But yeah, not normally together, but if they are, they may be a family.
Thanks for calling, Chris. Appreciate it. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. And speaking of emails, Jill wants to know the difference between American badgers and European badgers. They seem much gentler in Europe, Jill says.
Yeah, very different, right? So there are lots of badger species all around the world. The most common ones that we know about are the American badger, because it's here in our backyard, and the European badger, which is throughout most of sort of northern and middle Europe and Asia. So that badger is in a different genus. It's Meles meles, and we have Taxidia taxis here in the US. And they are quite different, both in look and in behavior and in, as you said, sociality, right? So European badgers are friendly. People, you know, have them in their gardens. They're social animals. They live in groups, right? You might, if you're going to see badgers in groups, it'll be the Eurasian badger. But there are also badgers in Africa, which have an even more ill-tempered reputation, honey badger. And there are some badger species in Southeast Asia as well. And so they're smaller and also live underground. One of the things that we are trying to build up research capacity to do right now is to look at badger genomes to look for those genes that are involved in adaptations to living underground. So badger species worldwide have all of these really cool adaptations for living underground. They have really strong forearms for digging. They have really long claws. They have spade-shaped bodies. They are adapted to hypoxia, so a lack of oxygen that you would have underground, or reduced oxygen. And so we are interested in seeing whether those adaptations arose sort of in similar ways all around the world, or if they're really different adaptations for these different habitats in which they live.
David emailed us. He just heard you recommend trail cams to capture images at night. They may use lights or infrared lights. If you put those outside a badger den, wouldn't this harass a badger? David was saying, please use cameras without light to get images by moonlight.
Yeah, you can definitely get images by moonlight for sure. I know that one of the ways in which it could be recommended, one of the strategies that you might use to discourage a badger from, say, being in your garden or underneath your shed might be exactly that, to shine lights near it to discourage it, to encourage it to move somewhere else. And that is a strategy that, you know, nuisance animal removal groups might recommend. But if you're excited to have your badgers nearby and on your property, then I agree that using moonlight would be a really good way to get pictures of badgers at nighttime. We did receive a lot of pictures during the daytime, and we've heard some callers today who mentioned seeing badgers during the daytime. So they are active during the daytime, just more active at night.
Kelly in southern Wisconsin, we'll go to you. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Larry. This is Kelly. I just had to tell the story about how my dad accidentally caught a badger in a trap. They were trapping woodchucks. It was a live trap. And anyway, they went out the next morning to see what they had caught, because, you know, they don't like them burrowing under the barn. And it was a woodchuck or a badger. Anyway, they're like, oh, how do we even grab the trap? Because this thing was not happy. And he said they eventually threw a coat over the top of it, and they loaded the trap with the badger in it on the back of a flatbed truck. And they took it out into the field miles away from the barn, and it took them a while to figure out how to actually undo the door to the trap. But they did manage to get it open, and the woodchuck would not, or the badger would not jump off the back of the truck. So they ended up, it came out of the trap, but it wouldn't jump off. So they ended up, every time it would get to the end, they would step on the gas. And finally it fell off the back of the truck.
Oh, my goodness. I imagine you've heard a lot of badger stories in your time, Emily.
Yeah, a lot of them involve the ill-tempered reputation. You know, I think in general they want to be left alone, right? They want to be able to do their badger thing. But yeah, if you accidentally catch one in a trap, it could be an unexpected adventure, I guess.
Renee in Vernon County saw a lot of badgers growing up. She emailed, her mother told her not to bring one home. That's probably good advice.
Good advice.
Very good advice. Oh, my gosh. What are the biggest threats to badgers, or are there many threats to badgers?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think as we encroach on their habitats, they're more likely to be nuisance animals, right? They're more likely to be in people's gardens. They're more likely to be under people's sheds. And so, you know, conflict with humans is always a danger to wildlife. I think probably one of the most dangerous times for badgers is when those young leave mom and disperse across habitats. They're going far distances to find new territories, and they are running around to do that. And so they cross roads, they cross railroad tracks, they cross all of the dangerous places for wildlife. And so that's probably their most dangerous time, is sort of late summer, early fall, when they're making that pulse of dispersal.
And I have seen, I saw one alive in the wild, but then I've seen a couple dead along the road too.
Yeah, and actually we collected a fair number of samples from people who reported roadkill animals. And so we also collected, we made use of those animals by going out to those locations and collecting samples from those roadkill animals and collecting DNA data from those animals as well. And so even though it's a sad outcome, it's nice that we were able to use that data as well.
So are you furthering the research on badgers? I know your lab is also doing a lot of other things, and I wanted to talk about that too.
Yeah, right now we're trying to secure funding for the badger genomics, the worldwide badger genomics adaptation work that I talked about a minute ago. I'm trying to figure out why, what those key innovations are that badgers have around the world and how they evolved. So we're working toward that now, and that's probably the most badger work we're doing at the moment. But yeah, our lab is working on a number of different wildlife projects, both in the realm of conservation and management.
Maybe give me a specific one or two.
Yeah, so, you know, our lab's motto is variety is the spice of life. So we continue to work on a wide variety of species. For example, we're using genetics to develop tools for monitoring chronic wasting disease in white-tailed deer, which is another big issue in Wisconsin. And we're collaborating with partners in Wisconsin and across the U.S. You know, Wisconsin residents know more than most about this devastating disease and understand that controlling it is really challenging, and yet a high priority for both wildlife health and public safety. So we're using genetic data and genomic data to better understand susceptibility in white-tailed deer, to better predict transmission and spread across the landscape, and ultimately to improve white-tailed deer management and CWD surveillance and control programs.
So that is, if you can make any progress in that area, would be really, really important to this state.
Yeah, yeah. So that's been a pretty big focus of our lab, sort of more closer to home. And, you know, I have an amazing student right now who's working on more of a conservation project looking at genetics to assess the Grenada frog. And the Grenada frog is a critically endangered frog that's found only in high elevation forests in the Caribbean island of Grenada. And so we're working with the Grenadian government and local organizations like the Milwaukee County Zoo to help bring awareness to this little known frog and to develop effective conservation strategies. And so the diversity of projects that our lab works on is pretty wide, but they all center on this using genetic and genomic tools to advance conservation and management.
Yes, it's really, really cool. I spent some time in Grenada, as a matter of fact, on a project, a project throughout the Caribbean, but I spent quite a bit of time in Grenada a long time ago now, but I haven't forgotten the country. It's a beautiful place and a lot of fun for me. So your website, what's the web? We'll post it up. We have it up on our page, I'm sure, but tell people what your website is, because you've got a lot of really cool stuff about and information about that. About that Badger project.
Yeah, the Badger Genetics Project is sadly over, but the website is still active. And so if you just type in Wisconsin Badger Genetics Project, UWM, right? UW-Milwaukee. You'll find it right away. And so there's some good badger facts on there, and there's a little bit, there's some maps on there of where we got, where we received reports from, and a little bit of links to our genetic and genomic data. There's some good pictures that people have sent of burrows and of badgers. And so you can get your badger fix at the website.
And Claire, just let me know, we do have that up on our website, ideas@wpr.org/Larry, you'll get the link there. Emily, it's been a real pleasure. You're doing some great work. Thank you so much for talking with us, and I hope we have a chance to visit again. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Larry. It was a pleasure.
Emily Latch, professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She focuses on biodiversity genomics. That's a really cool and interesting stuff, isn't it? We'll find another reason to talk with her. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about road salt, spreading salt, one way to make us safer, but we'll take a look at the impacts on our environment as well. That's tomorrow. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.